Dallas-Fort Worth.
From EWTN News Nightly in Washington, D.C., I'm Tracy Sable with an EWTN News Link. President Joe Biden is commuting the sentences of 37 of the 40 people on death row. They now face life in prison without the possibility of parole. Biden said that he could not, quote, stand back and let the new administration resume executions that I halted. The man accused of killing the CEO of United Healthcare has pleaded not guilty. Luigi Mangione appeared in a Manhattan courtroom where his attorney said that the New York mayor's statements will make it tough for Mangione to receive a fair trial. Pope Francis reminded the faithful that no child is ever a mistake. During his Sunday Angelus address, the Holy Father highlighted the mothers and children visiting St. Peter's Square and said that a child is a gift of life. I'm Tracy Sable with EWTN News Nightly. Be sure to join us this evening on EWTN.
The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In.
You have always been a voice of reason through all of this.
Appreciate your time, what you're doing for America.
I give you advice, and it doesn't work at all.
You are definitely not inept by any means.
I like to hear women say that about me.
Whatever advice you're going to send my way, I am 100% taking it.
I can't tell you what to do. I will not tell you what to do.
Okay. Well, thanks.
That wasn't the answer I wanted.
Are you kidding me?
Great stuff, Dr. Ray. I'm glad I called.
I've scheduled my day around listening to your radio show.
You don't have to laugh so hard.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I don't know how I'll do today. I'm kind of tired. I don't want to complain. But my neighbor pounded on my door at 3 a.m. I couldn't believe it. Now, lucky for him, I was still up playing my bagpipes. So, nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday, where I do my very best to go back through the E-Persons that I receive. Dr. Ray, why E-Persons? Email, please. No. In the ever-evolving language that you are no longer allowed to use, male is a patriarchal. It's often associated, unspoken, toxic male. So I'm just trying to neutralize it. I don't want to be linguistically insensitive. E-Person Monday, where I hand select those E-Persons that come to me. Try to understand, digest them, read them between the lines. I don't read the whole E-Person and say, okay, here's what I think. I try to go along as though someone were speaking to me, sitting across from me, saying these things. And then I could interrupt, which I'm good at, and offer observations, suggestions, something that occurs to me while they are speaking. Only in this case, they're speaking through the phone onto either a piece of paper if I print it out, or I look at the phone. Now, the bad thing about looking at a phone is this has happened many times. While I'm reading the E-Person, I get a phone call, and it totally blocks it. Being my age, I don't really know how to get out of that, so I don't know how to hang up the phone and then go back to the E-Person, which usually takes me about 8 minutes to figure it out. So I always have my 6-year-old granddaughter here to more or less explain to me how to do it quickly. She'll grab the phone and go, shh. No, that's not true because she doesn't even have a phone. She doesn't even know what they are. All right, so we will get to those E-Persons momentarily. Somebody comes into my office as a parent, and typically if this is something to do with a child's conduct, behavior, the parent has reasons that they've been unsure of themselves regarding their authority, reasons that they haven't disciplined like they believe they should have, reasons that they've been reluctant to assert their parenthood, and I have to explore these things. I can't simply say, and I learned this a long, long time ago, I can't simply say, well, try X, ABC. Because if there are roadblocks to their trying X, ABC, I got to try to get past those roadblocks. Here's one. It's not necessarily a top one, but it's probably in the top 10. I just don't want to break his spirit. Discipline doesn't break spirits. Mean discipline can break a spirit. Having standards, holding a child accountable, having a consequence to help teach the lesson, which is what the world does, by the way, is not mean. It doesn't break spirits. If you say, I'm going to break his spirit by holding him accountable for his conduct, the world will crush his spirit. Because the world puts consequences on misbehavior much stronger than a loving parent does. If a child is slacking in his chores, a loving parent may find some consequence, some rule, something to enforce that these chores get done. An employer will fire him. He'll lose the job with all the complications that entails. So the world can break spirits. It can do that because the world can teach rough. Parents teach with love. When a parent says, I don't want to break his spirit, are you saying that the rest of the time that you're a loving parent doesn't send a message that you're not trying to be mean or break his spirit? As a matter of fact, my experience is that when your discipline isn't confident, when it isn't calmly authoritative, you're likely to get very frustrated. And when you get frustrated, you say things you regret. You yell. You argue. You get nasty. You think to yourself, if I talk this way to any other adult in my life, I would lose them as a friend. And if they were family members, they would retreat from me. So there's an inverse relationship between authority and breaking spirits. If you don't have authority, you're more likely to, quote unquote, break a spirit because you do all kinds of things that don't work in your frustration. If you do have authority, if you state your case, you state your expectation, he's not allowed to mistreat his sister. When he mistreats his sister, here's what you're going to do about it. Now that's authority. It's not mean. It's a message. Don't treat your sister this way. But Dr. Ray, shouldn't he just know not to treat his sister that way? No. Why? Well, Christians understand fallen human nature. We're bent toward the self. And if I'm bent toward the self, I ain't bent toward you. And if I have to live with you in my house, and I'm 10 and she's 7, I'm the dominant one as far as I'm concerned. So, no. If you have to discipline me in 1 month 17 times because of how I mistreated or taunted or tormented my sister, will you break my spirit? Will 12 not break my spirit, but 17 will? Calm discipline doesn't break spirits. It just teaches a lesson. And the rest of the time, I'm going to assume that you're not mad at this child. You're not nasty with him. You're not shunning him. You're not saying, if you can't learn to treat your sister right, don't even talk to me because I don't even want to talk to you. I can't stand the look of your face. You're not doing that. You're basically saying in between discipline, hey, let's all just get along. I can get along. As a matter of fact, most of the time, I'd say 90%+ of the time in any reasonably functioning household, discipline is not there. It's not involved. Less than 10% of the time, probably, discipline is involved. And it's even less when you're consistent. because consistent discipline leads to less discipline, because the child's not dumb. The child knows, if I do this, this is what's going to happen, so I don't think I better do that. You don't break a spirit by holding a child accountable to reasonable, fair, and I dare say high standards. You're much more likely to break a spirit when you get angry or mean or personal, because this child frustrates you because you're not able to establish discipline. If you can't say, go to the corner, please, and get cooperation without a fight, without a brawl, without coming out of the corner 27 times, without a meltdown, you get frustrated. Why wouldn't you? So it isn't the discipline. It isn't the corner that's breaking the spirit. It's the fight.
But Dr. Ray, how do I avoid the fight?
Well, I'm looking at the clock here. That will be a monologue for another time. And it comes up here on this program frequently. Discipline doesn't break spirits. Harsh discipline runs the risk of breaking spirits. I'm Dr. Ray.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
My daughter told me she was published in a scientific journal as an undergrad. I'm so proud of her. The world needs Catholic physicists, and my daughter's going to be one of them.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Hey, I'm going to be that unusual caller for you, calling in to pour praise upon you.
Very nice to have you with me, Dr. Ray Guarendi, the program The Doctor Is In. Oh, let's see, what do we got here? Oh, yeah. You know, if you're reading one of those baby books and they tell you that infants need to eat every 2 to 3 hours, they don't tell you that this behavior continues until the child turns 18 or older and finally moves out of your house, eating every 2 to 3 hours. Dear Dr. Ray, today on your program, someone called in regarding his unbelief because of God's lack of revelation to him. Yeah, the call was, I would believe if God revealed himself more to us. You know, in essence, why is he hiding? Why can't he just come out and say, here I am, here's the proof? Well, let me stop right there. Well, one of the reasons he doesn't give proof is because that would force you to believe. you would believe in the proof. You wouldn't believe in God. If my wife says to me, Ray, at the mall, I was shopping. I wasn't meeting someone. And I said, no, I don't believe that because I'm going to look at all of the cameras in the mall just to make sure you were doing what you said you were doing. And then at the end of that, I said, okay, now I believe you. I had proof. But if my wife, who has never met someone, as far as I know, and always been faithful, tells me I was shopping, then do I trust her or do I trust the cameras? So God isn't going to force himself on us. He's not going to give us so much revelation that now you can believe by reason totally, completely. You don't need any trust in God whatsoever. It's not even a segment of your belief. The caller, Dr. Ray, didn't get much of a chance to interact with you. Well, yes and no. I don't recall all the details, but that's probably more true because he asked the question. He said, there's a God, why doesn't he reveal himself? Then I'll believe in him. You told him about Eucharistic miracles, the Shroud, the Tilma of Guadalupe, and the like. Then you said, Dr. Ray, that when most people say that God hasn't revealed himself, they haven't really bothered to look. Yes, I absolutely believe that. And it befuddles me as a psychologist when they say, well, you know, he's got to drop it in my lap. When you're dealing with an infinite question, see, the results of this question, the outcome of this question is infinite. Everything else you do in your life is going to end. No matter what it is, the biggest mistake you made, whatever decision you make is going to end at some point. This question, is there a God? Is Christ God? And what do I do with that? Those questions are the biggest because they're the only one with infinite ramifications. You said, I'll repeat this because here's his objection. You said that you find when most people say that God hasn't revealed himself, they haven't bothered to look. Then he says, well, that's not revelation. It's looking and digging. Well, first of all, I would dispute that. It's not digging. It's just searching. I'm going to know. I want to know about this God. So I'm going to look into what he has revealed. I'm not going to say, you haven't revealed enough for my taste. No, I'm going to look at what he's revealed. To say he hasn't revealed it means it doesn't exist. If it exists, then I need to look at it. He says, if I want you to know me better, I reveal myself specifically to you. Well, that's one way, and one could reasonably posit that God has revealed himself specifically to us. Not individually to us, specifically to us, in the sense that he's given us things to look at and to consider. For him to say, Ray, you don't need to look. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to drop it in your front door. Well, then he's coming after me to say, here's my revelation, Ray. You have to look at it because I'm putting it right in front of your face. Am I going to say to God, well, you know, I don't think you gave me enough. I still maintain that when people use that as a rationale, they're basically saying there isn't enough evidence for me to look at. And furthermore, why should I have to look at it? It should be obvious. That makes no sense. I don't tell you to go do research on me. Well, I would say this. If I want to know about you, I would ask about you. I wouldn't say, I'm only going to know about you what you tell me. I'm going to ask about you. I'm going to explore who you are. Why wouldn't I? People who have been married 40 years know a lot more about their spouse than they did when they first got married because of experience, because of conversations, because of talk, because of observations. All kinds of input came in and said, yeah, I know this woman 40 years better than I did 40 years ago. Well, wouldn't there be a parallel to God? I know him better because I've looked into what he has offered us to look into. I don't quite understand the reasoning that says, if I go search, then it's not revelation. Of course it's revelation. Everything you know, you've searched. If you have a degree in engineering, you have studied engineering. You went after the revelations of science regarding your particular type of engineering. You looked into it. You explored it. You didn't say, well, engineering just needs to come to me. No, here's the information. Check it out. That's the way it is with everything. Not just religion. Everything. George Washington hasn't really revealed himself, but it's safe to say you probably know something about George Washington because you researched it. You looked into it. If you want to know about George Washington, you don't say, well, George, I want to hear what you have to say. But even if he wrote things, you got to go look at them. So at the bottom of that, it said here, do you disagree? Well, I think that's pretty clear. I do. But he says, thanks. It's from Joe in Pennsylvania. So hopefully I can tell Joe that, in fact, I've looked at that. Okay, let's see what else we got. Got that and got that. Here's one, Dr. Ray. Oh, yeah. Do I have enough time? I'm going to have to go past the break on this. I have a first-grade boy who is very impulsive at school. Now, when I hear somebody say that, very impulsive, the first thing I'm going to do is, what do you mean by impulsive? Typically, what they mean is he acts out. He does things that are disruptive in class. So we usually don't use the word impulsive where he would be walking out of the classroom and say to his teacher, I love having you for a teacher. I just felt impelled to say that. No, when we use the word impulsive, we are saying he's acting out in ways he shouldn't. His teachers make it a point to let me know when this happens. Although it's not all the time. When it does happen, it seems to be an extreme case of impulsive behavior. Okay, so what is the extreme? What exactly is he doing? And is it impulsive? It may not be impulsive at all. It may be he's just breaking a classroom rule. He could have plenty of forethought, but all you see is the behavior. He may size up the situation, do a lot of thinking, and then say, oh, I'm going to do it anyway. And it appears impulsive. That is in part why I think that's overdiagnosis of ADHD. Because many kids act out and it looks like an impulse. It looks like they can't control themselves. It looks like they were impelled to do this when in fact the thought occurred to them. When confronted with this information, he tells me, first grade, he's probably seven, that he is the class clown and he just likes to be silly. If that's his motive, and again, you always got to be suspect about a seven-year-old telling his motive. Adults really have a hard time figuring out our motives for a lot of things. Seven-year-olds, they usually kind of shoot in the dark what their motive is. Now, if he likes being silly, that means he's being disruptive. That's what he's doing. Okay, is that impulsive? Well, we don't know. I've not known how to deal with this. And often, he gets a stern conversation, and something important taken from him. All right. I want to address that, but I'm looking at the clock here. In about 20 seconds, that music's going to start. I'm going to do a quick summary of this on the other side of the break. And then I'm going to talk about what happens when you've got a kid doing something like this in a classroom setting for whatever the reason. And oftentimes it's because the schools don't have much in the way of discipline anymore. And that's always bothered me, because the kids get blamed for it, because the kids are pushing on the limits and the discipline is weak. But we'll get to that. I'm Dr. Ray, and I thank you so much for joining me here on The Doctorism.
The arguments raging in today's society as to the state of marriage and who may enter into it shouldn't cause us to forget its permanent characteristics. According to the Catholic Catechism, the matrimonial covenant has two main purposes: the good of the spouses and the procreation and education of offspring. Our Lord Jesus raised this covenant to the dignity of a sacrament. The Catechism also reminds us of the indisputable fact that marriage is not a purely human institution. God Himself is the author of marriage, and only God, not man, can change its common and permanent characteristics. It began with the creation of man and woman in the image and likeness of God, who is love. Thus, their mutual and unfailing love becomes an image of the absolute and unfailing love with which God loves man. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
He is only one of four popes honored as the great.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Leo I was pope at a time when Roman civilization was being overrun by barbarian armies. He stood as a light in the darkness and even saved the city of Rome from destruction by Attila and the Huns. Leo died in 461.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. You know, they have that Weather Channel on cable TV, 24 hours of weather, 7 days a week. I had something very similar like that when I grew up. We called it a window. Yeah, you really didn't know what was coming too much until you looked out there. You kind of saw it. All right, E-Person Monday, Living Right with Dr. Ray is the, that's a TV show. The Doctor is In is the name of the radio show. This was from a mom. Quick recap. First grade boy, she describes as impulsive. Well, impulsive means he's acting out, because we really don't describe somebody as impulsive if they are quickly to say nice things or to do nice things. He's so impulsive. A girl dropped all her books and he impulsively bent down and picked them all up for her. No. But we talk about it being disruptive in a classroom setting. And then mom says here, he is very impulsive sometimes. She calls it an extreme case. He says he's the class clown. She says, I don't know how to deal with this. Now, here's what she says she does. He gets a stern conversation and something important taken from him. We're at a loss for how to change this behavior and feel our usual response has absolutely lost its luster. Well, probably has. All right, several explanations here. Obviously, don't know your son, don't know the circumstances. Here's the common ones. The first is a generic one. And that is, there are more disruptive, difficult to manage kids in a classroom setting because the schools as a group have massively lost authority. Their ability to keep order and make the classroom environment a calm, good one to learn in, for many, many reasons, has been eroded. It's been corroded, not the least of which is a lot of notions and ideas that don't work well that have now been spilling into education left and right. So that's one thing. I see a lot of kids who act up in school that wouldn't act up. Who wouldn't act up if, in fact, the school had better discipline? Let me just give just a quick example on that. When I worked in the schools in Columbiana County, we had multiple classrooms called severe behavior handicap. These were the kids who were very disruptive in class. They were assessed, and they were placed in a special education classroom, particularly those kids who were behavior problems in the class. In one elementary class, we had an ex-Marine. He was a very loving guy, but he was no nonsense. His class was far better behaved than many of the regular classrooms. Why? Well, because he had a discipline system, he tolerated no nonsense, he was very calmly authoritative, and he loved those boys. That simple. So, in fact, his discipline really cut back on their disruptive, quote-unquote, impulsive behavior. Now, Mom says, oh, we've talked to him, and we take something away. Well, okay, Mom, first of all, you probably don't hear every time this happens. You said it. You really probably only hear about an extreme example. He does a lot of little picky-unish things that the teacher doesn't tell you about. She just tells you the bigger ones, the impulsively big ones. Two, you're probably responding too mildly. You've had many conversations. Obviously, they're not doing it. And you take something away. Well, the average American kid has so many perks and privileges. When you take something away, it's almost so what? So what? Now, there's a technique in one of my books that I talk about, and it is the most potent technique by far, especially for first grade kids, elementary kids, when they only have one teacher. Rating form. Every day the teacher rates his behavior, excellent, good, fair, poor, which can be EGFP, or it can be big, big smiley face, normal smiley face, flat face, frown face. That's it. Just rates it. If she wants to make a note on it, what he did, fine. If she doesn't, he doesn't, no problem. Going to get the day rated. That comes home every day, every single day. If it doesn't come home, it's an automatic poor. If it's lost, automatic poor. I forgot to get it filled out, automatic poor. Automatic poor. A poor means that's it. All privileges for the evening are gone. Not one. Don't take away something important. All privileges. Everything. Dessert, outside, activities, anything. Anything like that. He can read, maybe color if you want to let him color, and then he goes to bed early. That's what a poor is. A fair, pick two or three things that are no longer available that evening, and he still goes to bed early. It's fair. A good day, normal privileges, normal freedoms, all this stuff happens. Excellent day, find something extra to let him earn, whatever it is. Maybe you keep some ice cream in the freezer and he gets a bowl of ice cream. Whatever it is, you pick. Something extra positive. EGFP. What you're doing here, Mom, is you are linking up his conduct at the school with your response. If we can assume, probably safely so, that the school really doesn't have much in the way of discipline options, and your little guy just happens to realize, hey, I can act goofy and it's fun and everybody laughs and I get applauded by some of the other badder kids in the classroom. Dr. A, they're not bad. Okay, some of the other more acting out impulsive kids in the classroom. It's worth it. Because first of all, not everything comes home, so Mom doesn't know about it sometimes. And second of all, they talk to me and they take away one of my perks. That's price worth paying, actually. I mean, it's more fun to act up at school than, okay, so I lost my video game. There's other things I can do. And that's typically one of the problems when parents take away a perk or a privilege. American kids have so many perks and privileges that when you take away one, all you're doing is scraping a little icing off the cake. You're not taking the cake away. If you do this, Mom, I can almost guarantee you within a month, he will have far more excellent and goods than he's been getting, were you to know what he's getting. And I would suspect that the teacher will say, what are you doing? This is working wonderfully. I have rarely seen it not work, especially with the younger kids. It is foolproof. It is predictable. There are no loopholes the child can find to get around it. And it puts a little oomph into your response to his disrupting the class. EGFP, big smiley face, normal smiley face, flat face, frown face. Try it, Mom.
With Teresa Tomeo.
We make no bones here at EWTN and Ave Maria Radio that we are Catholic and that we are here to educate the Catholic faith. So we're very clear as to whom and what we represent. But you can't hide behind a title like the secular media do, claiming they're a news operation when it's nothing but propaganda for particular causes. It goes back to the pride of not admitting that maybe we need to look in the mirror and change some things. And I know from a personal perspective, I dug in my heels in terms of not wanting to leave the secular media. Oh no, I have a better plan. If you could just keep me here and let me make the big bucks and I'll still do my Christian thing here and there, we can be besties, God. It took me 3 years to finally say, I am yours. I was made for you. What do you want me to do?
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern. On EWTN Radio.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. This strange beatitude reminds us that Jesus is challenging us with his ways to heaven on a new exodus. We're leaving behind the Egypt of this world to find the eternal paradise of heaven. When we tend to think of happiness, we tend to think of it in a self-centered way, a possession of a temporary good or passing fancy. But Jesus is calling us into eternal happiness. And actually, morality is a search for happiness, says Dominican priest Servais Pinkers. We're looking to be happy, and a lot of times we end up at dead-end roads that don't lead us to where we want to go. How can we be blessed when we mourn? In sorrow and difficulty, hardship and cross, we are called closer to Jesus. It's God's fingerprint in our heart reminding us that we're made for eternal happiness. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is a co-production of the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, as well as Ave Maria Radio Communications there in Ann Arbor. Right now, manning, can I say manning? Personing? Peopling? The boards, Eric Dumont, normally called Screamer, but on this E-Person Monday, he's been taken over. So, this is from Father Eric. I was reading in the June issue of Purgatory Today, that said, if you get an e-person from a priest, you gotta go to that one. Before I was a priest, I was married for 18 years, later vocation. My wife died 25 years ago. We didn't have any children, but after I was ordained a priest, people came to me asking advice on how to raise their children. I would tell them, sorry, I know absolutely nothing about raising children. I can tell you what my parents did with me and my brother, but that won't answer your questions. Now, Father, if I may disagree with you, first of all, you don't have to experience something to be able to offer good advice about it. There are general ideas and principles, making a good family, good parents. And even though you didn't have hands-on experience about that, you still have a lot of wisdom to offer. I don't have hands-on experience about a lot of things. I was never female. I was never in trouble with the law. I never used drugs or chemicals. I was not a rebellious adolescent. So I guess about the only thing I could really deal with people from somewhat of a personal experience would be aging psychologist white males married to the same woman who had adoptive kids and not biological kids. So I think you're selling yourself short. Now, you're saying you're a retired priest, so maybe not too many people come to you anymore asking about family, child rearing, or marriage. But you still have principles founded upon what our faith has taught us about good living, good virtue, raising children, what matters. You don't have to have raised your own children not to know that vile video games are terrible for them, or that a cell phone at age 12 is a really, really, really foolish idea. Or certain peers are someone that the parents should simply not allow into their child's social circle. And I'm sure, Father, you knew all that stuff. So I think you're selling yourself a little short because you went on to say this, which was very kind of you. Now I tell them to listen to The Doctor Is In on EWTN Radio or check out his podcasts online. Father Eric, thank you so much. All righty, we got another March one here. I recently started dating a Catholic woman about my age. I'm 29, she's 28. We liked each other. And we would like to proceed with a second date. However, very recently she told me via text, interesting way, she's getting to know other people and is not yet ready to commit to exclusively dating me. I am an emotional and passionate person. This really bothers me. Maybe it shouldn't, but it does. Okay, here's the answer to that. And again, as I put this email in the queue, I didn't remember where it was going. Now it does. She likely said this because at the conclusion of our date, I told her I'm not dating anybody else and I only want to date her. Okay, that might be a little quick. That even if your date went wonderfully, that was pretty premature. Moving forward, if we have a second date, I would really like to address this with her, but I'm not sure how. Well, I got an idea. You tell her, I spoke way premature. Of course you can see other people. And of course I can see other people. I hope we get to know each other, though, through a date here and there. That's the way to do it. Back it up. Back up the truck. Get out of this idea that I'm not going to date anybody else, and I would hope you wouldn't either. Ooh, no, real soon. And I think she was telling you, whoa, that is way too fast for me. Mm-hmm. I want to tell her that it's difficult for me to be myself knowing she's seeing other guys and that I'm just one of her options. And I feel like I'm being played like a contestant on The Bachelorette. And well, here's the problem. She can see other guys. She can date other guys. There's this mindset. My children have told me this. They're in their 20s. They've told me that there's a mindset now among young people, which is if you date someone, that's it. You're exclusively linked to dating them, and you just can't date anybody else. It's understood. And I was shocked at that because when I was in college and I was in my 20s, I dated freely. And it wasn't because, oh, I took you out, therefore I can't ask anybody else out. That made no sense to me. And fortunately, that's how I got to know my wife. So I think you might have scared her off. So the best thing to do, if you want my opinion here, is to back up, back off. Now, if you say, I can't live like that, well, then this girl is not for you. It's that simple. If you're saying, I can't. I also want to reach an agreement with her that after a certain number of dates, possibly two or three more, if they happen, I want her to make up her mind to commit to me or not. Well, again, that might be moving a little too fast for her. Why don't you just see how it unfolds and don't get into the old, okay, I'm just ready to be committed to you, because first of all, you don't even know her. You only took her out one time. You don't know her. You don't even know if this is someone that you want to exclusively date, and to limit yourself in case you might meet someone else that you might be more in tune with. No, I think that I can speculate, can't guarantee, but I would guess pretty strongly that if you maintain this present idea that only you, only me, she'll back out. I'm not very experienced with dating, by the way. I value your insight. I'm eager for what you might advise. Well, that's what I would advise. If you say there's a timeline when you have to commit yourself to me, okay, but you might be at risk forcing that timeline upon her. Now, I know there are people listening who say, Dr. A, when you date somebody, this is a courtship thing, and you are looking ahead to marriage. Okay. If that's you, that may not be her. And if that's not her, then she's going to simply say, well, then this agreement is not for me. There could be some bad news here, too. I didn't want to speculate on this. It may be for her that the date didn't go all that well, or perhaps she didn't relate all that well to you. That doesn't mean you're a wretched person. There's just people you don't relate well to, and if she doesn't relate well to you, that's her way of saying, well, I'm still on the market looking around to meet people. Excuse that term, market. I know that probably bothered some people, but just using it very loosely. So there's my thoughts there, sir. If you want to go forward with her, I guess I'm saying you don't go forward too fast. I'm Dr. Ray.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling. 40 years of experience, 17,000 current students, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plan, counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right, pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton. Some of our children. Tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program.
You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. That is SetonHome.org.
Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise is more popular than ever. Every year, couples testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. The 2026 cruise is already three-quarters full, so if you want to join, now is the time. Special guests include musicians Andrea Bocelli, Matt Maher, Sarah Kroger, and John Ignatie, as well as hosts from Ave Maria Radio. Fun, romance, devotion. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the travel tab to find out more.
We are the pro-life generation, passionate about building the culture of life in our healthcare and in our nation. But not all healthcare options are equally pro-life, and some provide morally objectionable procedures. CMF Curo is different. CMF Curo is a pro-life Catholic healthcare ministry providing a pathway for its members to build the culture of life in their healthcare choices, not destroy it. Learn more about CMF Curo at MyCatholicHealthcare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Running a little short on time, so I'm going to go to an email I got from C.S. Lewis. Okay, it's kind of like Abraham Lincoln said, don't believe everything you read on the internet. This came from the quotable Lewis, Letters to an American Lady, 1962. Did they have the internet in 62? I don't think so. He says this. It's one simple line, and it is packed. We are all, underline all, fallen creatures. And all, underline all, hard to live with. Now, there may be many of us listening, many of you listening, saying, no, I'm not hard to live with. I'm not. My spouse is hard to live with, or my mother-in-law is hard to live with. But I really don't think I am. I think I do a lot. I think I go over and above the call of duty to not be difficult. And that may be. If you had 100 people observing the relationship, 92 of them would say, oh, yeah, the other one is much harder to live with than you are. However, that said, I do marriage counseling, so I've got this little twitch. Every 5 or 6 years, I'd like someone to come into my office and say something like, Dr. Ray, you know why I'm here? Because it's finally occurred to me, I'm difficult to live with. And I had to drag my spouse in here so my spouse could help me take a good, hard, close look at what I'm like. Now, that doesn't happen. The willingness to say, I've got the difficult aspects to my personhood. And even though it seems to me that I'm living with someone that is just unpleasant or critical, even though it seems to me my mother has always been difficult, even though it seems to me that my 27-year-old child is just frustrating, all that may be true. But you start the search looking inward. What is it about me that I might be able to alter that would make this person not be this way with me? Now, that doesn't mean that if you alter them, alter yourself, that they will change. Doesn't mean that. But what it does mean is that's your best chance. I would say the ratio of people in my office who call someone else difficult as opposed to calling themselves difficult is about 10 to 1. Maybe it's more than that. Maybe it's 20 or 30 to 1. Because we see other people much more easily as difficult than we see ourselves. That's understandable. Because if you are difficult, one of the characteristics of being difficult is you don't recognize you're difficult. Of the difficult people in your life, how many of them have come up to you and said, I know I'm difficult. I know I put you on edge. I know I say and do things that really can irritate you. I know that. How many? What's it, 10 to 1? 20 to 1? It's a ratio. So I guess Lewis is trying to make the point that you always recognize there are difficulties in your own behavior. And even though it's easy to think I'm doing everything I can do to get along with this person, I'm a sweetheart and they're not. It's easy to think that. The question is, how true is it? Now, I know for me, if I say, oh, no, I'm the nice one in our marriage, well, I deserve to look hard at myself. That's the one thing I deserve. And it would be wise if I did to find out where and how I can be different toward my spouse, independent of how my spouse is toward me. See, that's the hard part. That's the really hard part. Old CS. He didn't email me, by the way. I just didn't want to tell you that. Okay. Thanks for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Grandy. Monday through Friday. Appreciate it. Walk with God. He's not difficult at all.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Mary Immaculate is an award-winning Catholic pre-K through 8th grade elementary school in the Diocese of Dallas. The school provides a Christ-centered learning environment that fosters each student to be a lifelong learner. Attend an open house to discover Mary Immaculate's amazing programs. Open houses are scheduled for Thursday, February 6th from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. at Mary Immaculate School in Farmers Branch. To register, visit the school's website at mischool.org.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company and want to explore options that align with your faith and values? There is an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful Catholics that never fund immoral medical services such as abortion and transgender surgeries. Prices start as low as $85 per month for a single and $512 for families. Call 844-719-2356 today or go to joinshs.com, a sponsor of the GRN.
Are you suffering with grief due to the loss of a loved one? St. Monica Catholic Church in Dallas invites all those suffering such a loss to its grief support group on Wednesdays starting February 5th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. The grief support group meetings will be held once a week for 10 weeks at the parish. If you'd like more information, please call the parish office at 214-358-1453 for more information. Their website is stmonicachurch.org. Don't lose faith. Jesus loves you.
The Guadalupe Radio Network welcomes new sponsor, Saint Candles. Founded by music executive to comfort a friend diagnosed with a life-threatening illness, the Saint Candle Collection has grown to more than 25 candles. Each modern candle is handmade with a prayer coin inside and dedicated to a patron saint. Saint Raphael for healing, Saint Philomena for children, Saint Anthony of Padua for finding love, and many more as well. To see what Saint Candles are available, visit saintcandles.com.
Are you in need of commercial or residential asphalt and paving projects such as driveway resurfacing and paving, recycled asphalt paving, chip seal and seal coating? The GRN welcomes Elite Asphalt as a sponsor of KATH 910 AM. At Elite, they can't be beat for the same quality. They would like to speak with you about the various solutions they can provide for your next project. They can be reached via phone at 817-961-9882, 817-961-9882, or online at eliteasphalt.net, eliteasphalt.net.